Good morning.
Good morning, Jensen.
I was driving my car a few days ago, and as a good Zen teacher that I am, I wasn't paying full attention to the road. I had a bunch of thoughts that were flowing through. And I was thinking back to when I had just gotten out of college, and I was looking for a job. And so my habit would be that every day I would look in the classifieds to see if there was a job. And one day I looked, and there was a job as a fourth grade teacher in St. Joseph's Elementary School in Demarest, New Jersey. Now, I was not trained as a teacher at all, but there were no qualifications, so I figured, well, what the heck. So I called up, and I was asked to go in for an interview. And I was introduced by the parish priest, Father Moore, who gave me the okay to be a fourth grade teacher. Now I was raised Lutheran, so now here I am in a Catholic school. And other than myself, everybody else was a nun that was teaching in the school. And just as a quick aside, I went there with a particular view of how this all works. You know, Catholicism, very strict, very proper, which for the most part it was. I mean, all the nuns didn't smile all that much, and they were very strict. And the principal's name was Principal, our sister, Laureen. And one day she had given me this assignment to run some papers over to the parish offices. And on my way over, I encountered Father Moore. And he said to me, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Well, Father, Sister Laureen wants me to take these over to the offices." And he looked at him. He said, "No, that's not where they go. Give me those." And he took them and he walked away. So when I went back, I figured I should tell Sister Laureen what had happened since, you know, I had this assignment. So I go into her office. And I sit down and I start telling her this. And she says, "You know what? Father Moore can sit on my thumb and rotate." And that way, there were those few seconds where it did not compute. So in this same setting, to get more back to the talk today, one day I was walking down the hall and one of the nuns was yelling at her class. I mean, really screaming, like she was really angry about something. And she said something to the effect, "If you students don't obey, you will die and go to hell." You know, it's like, this is like a whole new world for me, you know. So thinking about this nun, you know, and the idea of heaven and hell, it brought back this childhood memory that I had. And normally I would go to church with my family on Sunday. And since I was 10 years old, I would go to Sunday school. And that was the place of indoctrination for us young children. And this, I don't remember why, but this particular morning, I was in church, sitting in a pew with the rest of the adults, and listening to the minister. He was delivering this fire and brimstone sermon on heaven and hell. And, you know, when I was thinking back to it, it was clear that this sermon was designed to scare all the parishioners straight. Right, to scare the hell out of them so they toe the line. And even as a 10-year-old, I remember sitting there and it was sort of like, I'm going to explain it in an adult way, but in some way I thought this as a child, which was, it was sort of crazy to me. Like, why would this guy be trying to scare us, you know? And there seemed to me there should be a different way for my being there. So anyway, that was the thought that it brought me back to, and then I decided to say a few words about heaven and hell. So in thinking about it, I didn't research this to make sure it was true, but I was thinking that from my own personal knowledge, that the idea of heaven and hell is found in most of the world's religions. All the major traditions, hell is a place that we go to after we die. And we go there to suffer and be punished for the sins that we have committed. Heaven, on the other hand, is also a destination, a place we go to after we die. But we go there to be rewarded for having lived a life of goodness, piety, faith, and virtue. And this place is transcendent and glorious. No people burning and screaming here. So thinking about this, this train of thought brought me to the question, well, how does Zen understand heaven and hell? And as I was thinking about that, about how to answer the question, how does Zen take up the matter of heaven and hell? Now, you probably have heard this before, but it's a good story to start off with. So the story goes, one day a burly, unkempt samurai came to an elderly Zen master and gruffly demanded that the Zen master tell him the nature of heaven and hell. And the old Zen master looked at the samurai right in the eye and he said, "Why should I tell a disgusting, miserable slob like you anything?" So, furious with the Zen master's answer, the samurai raised his sword over his head, preparing to behead the teacher. And at that moment, the Zen master responded, "That is hell." And instantly the samurai saw that because he was filled with hatred and loathing, resentment and anger, he was ready to cut this elderly Zen master's head off. And that he was so deep in hell, he could kill this innocent little old man. And at this point, his eyes began to fill with tears as he laid down his sword and put his hands together in gassho. And as he did this, the Zen master said, "That is heaven." So this story teaches us that heaven and hell are not a destination, not some far-off realm, but rather the truth of our lives right now in this moment. It also points to the fact that heaven and hell are our own creation, determined by how we respond to the ingredients of our lives as they present themselves moment by moment. So this challenging and seemingly rude teacher was offering the samurai the opportunity to awaken to this truth. It was up to the samurai how to perceive this often, as either hellacious or heaven-sent. Now, another way that we can create heaven or hell for ourselves is caused by how we see ourselves in relationship to the world. If we live and move in the world self-centeredly, feeling separate from those around us, we are creating the hell of separation, of loneliness. We are doing it. Conversely, if we practice diligently, we will become more and more selfless and more connected to those around us. Through our efforts, we will realize heaven on earth, the beauty of oneness. Now, on the way here this morning, NPR was on when I turned on the radio. Usually, I don't listen to the radio on Sunday morning coming here because, you know, that kind of stuff activates the mind. And I only caught a bit of this, but it was really quite beautiful. A woman, I have no idea who she was, she was talking about something about these transcendent moments that happen when everybody is living in harmony. They have the same emotion, the same thoughts, the same feeling. And what she was referring to was the hurricane, the aftermath of the hurricane in Houston. And she was talking about unsolicited people were getting on their jet skis or in their canoes or in their power boats. And without suggestion, they were all going out to round up people who were stranded. The same thing with people with pickup trucks. Again, without being called upon, they just naturally went out where they could to bring people to safety. And she makes this observation. She said, all this was occurring without anybody asking the other person who they voted for. So I took this class many years ago. And it was with a woman named Pia Melody, who's renowned in the field of drugs and alcohol recovery. And part of this training focused on feeling. And regarding feelings, she made an important distinction. And she said, when we work with our feelings, we should always say, I'm going to use anger, we should always say, I feel angry because I let what you said hurt me. I feel angry because I let what you said hurt me. So the point was that we should not say, I feel angry because what you said. So we should not say, I feel angry. I feel angry because what you said made me feel angry. In other words, the other person made me feel angry. And the point is that it's what we tell ourselves about what the other person said that causes us to be angry. So, again, to extend that point, if we perceive it one way, we are dealing it from a place of heaven, from a place of harmony. If we see it the other way, we are creating a hell for ourselves. We are creating suffering by not realizing that we don't have to take it in this particular way. Even if it was intended that way, we don't have to receive it that way. So this is pointing towards the fact that how awake we are, how clear we are, will determine whether our relationships will be from heaven or from a place of hell. So having to do with people saying stuff to us, having our feelings hurt, I may have even told this story, but I love it. There's a guy named Goose Gonsolin. This takes place, it was in the Yankee farm system, so it was minor league baseball. But they also have sort of a World Series. There's a championship at the end of the season. And so this is in the three-game series. And this is the third game of this championship series. And each team had one victory. And so now they're down to the final game. And there's two outs. And the team that's winning is in the field. And there are two men on base. There's somebody on first base and somebody on second base. So if one of those two runners score, the game is tied. And if they both score, this team in the field loses the game. So there's also this thing in baseball. If there are runners on base, many times the pitcher's back is to the runners. So it's the catcher's job when something happens and the runners start running to tell the pitcher what to do. So in this case, the batter hits a ball that's running slowly towards the pitcher. And of course, the runners take off. And Gonsolin, who was the catcher, throws off his mask and he stands up and he's screaming, "Second base! Second base!" And the pitcher picks up the ball and without hesitation throws the runner out at third. And so they win the championship. So after the game, one of the local sports guys for the local paper comes up to the pitcher and he's talking to him and he said, "Didn't you hear Gonsolin when he was screaming to you, second base, second base?" He said, "Yeah, but I considered the source." So it might behoove us, so we don't create hell for ourselves, to consider the source. So to conclude from a Zen point of view, heaven and hell are not destinations that we arrive at when we die. Heaven and hell are descriptions of our lives that we create for ourselves, moment to moment. And so this insight that we do create these states of suffering for ourselves, or not suffering, is actually very freeing. And so I'm just going to end with a quote, which has been repeated many times, but this is a Korean Zen master, Sun San Nim, who always would say, "Mind makes." Right? Mind makes. So keep an eye on your minds.